to do just that, to give you some of the facts as well as figures is not found in books, not written on paper, but comes from practical experience. Like these fellows over here, you see, that's what we mean. You don't find that written on the books. It's in the hand, but not written by the hand or with the hand. We begin the second half of the... We begin the second part of the program with joys and sorrows of a veteran black pastor. And as you can look and see, we have but one veteran pastor here in our midst. The good Lord says, by their fruits ye shall know them. And here's the fruit, you see. It is right here. He's looking up and said, there's no difference with yours, but I know you don't see that much frost on that top of my head, so I'm not considered a veteran. I can't speak of the sorrows. I do have some joys in the ministry. I'm a Johnny-come-late. I graduated in 1937, while Dr. Hunt, I think, goes back to 1920. He just corrected me. He said 1931 he graduated. But that's still way back. And there were many sorrows. Mine have all been joy. I'll begin with when I was in the eighth grade. I'm a native Louisianan. I came to Greensboro with a banjo on my knees, and I went back to Alabama with that same banjo after graduation. When I was in the eighth grade, back in Mansoura, Louisiana, where I was born and reared, one of the church officials who had been breathing down my pastor's back because he said that he had stacked his statistical report. He had put on his statistical report X number of children in school. And he came to check on that. And he considered only those boys and girls who were yea so high as eligible for parochial school. I was among those who were up here. And I was robust, and my seatmate was even taller, and he was much broader than I, and heavier. And he said, those two big head boys need to be out in the field plowing. After graduation, and now working in Philadelphia, where I am presently, I went on vacation, and the men on the in the Louisiana field were in conference in New Orleans, and I drove up with no intention of, so to speak, disrupting the conference. And somebody looked out and said, oh, there's Lavallee from Philadelphia. And my grandmother, who was 97 years old, was with me. That was the first time she had been further than 3 miles from her home. And I talked her into riding 122 miles with me into New Orleans. We drove up, and some of the men came out to greet me, and then a few more came, and then a few more came, and the chairman, of course, was totally disgusted now, and he said, we're going to declare a recess, because most of the fellows are out there. And the man who made the statement, namely that those two big head boys need to be out there on the farm, he came along too, because he had not seen me since he visited the classroom. And then he came up and he said, I ought to know you, but I don't think I do. He says, who are you? Somebody said you are one of our pastors. I said, yes, I am. I'm that same big head boy who was sitting in the back of the classroom whom you said should be out in the farm. He said, I didn't say nothing like that. So yes, you did too. I graduated, as I said, in 1937. And now we had begun to see the light as far as the work was concerned. It wasn't much light, but it was light nevertheless. The men who had preceded me in the ministry in Alabama in particular, they were the ones that really had the sorrows. They were not all gone when I got there. There were still some remaining. I tell some of my people that today, when I went to the Alabama field, my salary was $25 a month. And out of that $25, I had to pay $5 because it was required of us to have X number of books in our library. And if we didn't have the books, nor yet the money was advanced to us by the Lutheran Synodical Conference Mission Board. And they took $5 out of our check or pay each month until that bill was paid. If you lived in the parsonage, which belonged to the missionary board of the Lutheran Synodical Conference, you had to pay $5 for rent. That also was taken out of your salary before you got it. So that gets me down now to $15 a month. Out of that, now there was laundry, there was room and board if you were in the parsonage, or if you were not in the parsonage, and other incidentals. So that by the time you paid all of that, the bottom line showed a number of zeros. A number of zeros. And those are the men that had the sorrows. I did remain a few figures above the zero. But many times, I had to go without because I just didn't have the wherewithal. As a result, I was 10 years getting married. Because I couldn't see taking a young lady into a situation like that. And back in those days, our wives were not permitted to work. We were told the wife is the help mate. She belongs in the house. And if she was out of the house, the word was get the queen back in the hive where she belonged. Which meant that if a young lady had prepared herself for some vocation, like in my case, the young lady that I was keeping company with and patiently waited these many years was a registered nurse. And I wouldn't dare suggest to her to give up her practice and then come and occupy the hive, which was the parsonage, and just look after the children should God feel that you needed children or should have them. The joys consisted really in this, that the people were appreciative of the gospel. You just couldn't lay back, so to speak, as a horse in the traces. You just had to give everything that you had. By the time I left Alabama, I was holding down, I wasn't pastoring, I was just holding down, I was filling the space of 6 congregations, thanks to this brother here. He saw to it that I got 3 of his congregations. I already had 3. He decided he wanted to take a sabbatical, and he left. And I got his 3 congregations and moved in his house. So when I came to Philadelphia, I left 6 congregations behind. And my supervisor, who back in those days were referred to as superintendents, not circuit counselors or advisors or what have you, said to me when I told him I had the call, he said, prior to that, I wanted to go into the army as a chaplain. And he said to me, when the Lord have need for you, he knows that J.G. Lavallee lives in Islington, Alabama, and that his post office box is 15, and the place where I got my mail was Kimbrough, Alabama, and he'll send you a letter. And one day I went to the post office, I had no knowledge whatsoever of it, there was a registered letter there at the post office for me. And when the postmistress saw me, she said, I have an important letter here for you. So I said to her, how do you know it's important? She said, it's registered. You got signed for it. So it must be important. So I said, okay. And I wondered what. And then I looked at the address before I signed it and said, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I said, who knows me in Philadelphia? I didn't know anybody. So I signed for it, and I couldn't go to the car to open it. I opened it right there. And then I saw the accompanying letter, and then I looked at these other things, and it said solemn call. Oh, I didn't know what this was all about because I had not received a call when I was assigned or told to go to Alabama. I was saying to some earlier this evening that my first charge or assignment was to be Moline, Illinois. But I was valedictorian for my class, and you didn't have to be too smart for that. There were only two in my class. And I was chosen to be the valedictorian. They could pronounce my name a little bit. Well, my name was harder to pronounce, so they took the hard part, and they pronounced my name, and they gave me the assignment. I was on the stage delivering the valedictorian address when the telegram boy bobbed his head in the door. And one of the instructors was sitting there at the door, guarding the door so that no one would come in and no one would leave until he said so. So when the boy bobbed his head in, he went out and he received the telegram. And when I had finished, then he gave me the telegram and it said, "Report to Alabama immediately and be prepared to preach two sermons on Sunday, May 31st. And this was May 26th that I received the telegram. And of course, I bucked, as the expression goes, I bucked like a mule. But the campus pastor happened to be my cousin, and my father had placed me in his charge. And he got the word right away that I wasn't going, and he beat it on over to the campus and said, "What is this I hear about you, boy?" I said, "What do you hear?" "I don't know. I hear you're not going. You're not going to go to Alabama." I said, "That's right." He said, "You are going to Alabama." I looked up at him. I didn't say anything. And then he said to me again, "You are going to Alabama." "Yes, sir." And of course, by this time, now the dean of the school had heard about it, and he had a hand in it, and he came. And he said, "My dear boy, I'm afraid you will have to go to Alabama, because that's what you have been told to do." Well, of course, I couldn't put up an argument. We were told back, and we observed that we had to be respectful to the old man and the hoary head. And both of them were old, and neither one had any hair on his head, so I had to follow through. So I went to Alabama, and believe me, I never dreaded as much as I did getting on that train on that Thursday, the 27th of May. I left at 9 o'clock on Thursday night from Greensboro, North Carolina, and I arrived in Alabama on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. I was dirty. I was hungry. I was disgusted. And I was in a strange land. I'd never been to Alabama. And I didn't know anybody. And I looked over the crowd. There were so many people there to see, not to meet me, but other relatives of theirs. And in the crowd, here comes a schoolmate of mine. And he said, "Boy, how are you feeling?" I said, "I'm feeling lousy." He said, "Have you had anything to eat?" I said, "Nope." He said, "Come with me." So he drove me. There was a chain restaurant, Twilly's. Remember those? He drove me to Twilly's. And of course, you could not tell what he was. He was very, very fair, and he had straight hair, he had green eyes, and what have you. So I got in the car with him. He didn't help me with my bags just because of that. So I had my bags and I was struggling with it, and then later I went and got my trunk, and here I was laboring with this steamer and got it in his trunk, and he was just standing there with his hands on his hips. So I got in the car and I followed him on, or he drove me to this chain restaurant, Twilly's. And some of the boys jumped on the running board. It was this curb service. They jumped on the running board, and he drove along. He didn't know that they were there. And said, "What do you want, boss? What do you want, boss? What do you want, boss?" And he went on. He didn't hear a thing. And finally, he said to me, and these are his very words, he said, "Nigger, what you want?" I was shocked. I didn't know what he meant. I didn't know what to say. So I looked at him, and I rolled my eyes at him. So then I answered reluctantly. I told him what I wanted. And the boys went and they got what we had ordered. And he said, "You see, boy, that's how I treat you guys down here." I said, "Look, you better tell me what you're going to do, fella, before, because I might mess up your playhouse." And from then on, the fun started, so to speak. I went to my quarters, which was the boys' dormitory. I was on a little cot. The springs were gone. I slept in there that night, and I heard something running around. Didn't know what it was, and it was dark as everything in there. As a matter of fact, the lights had been turned off. You see, school was over with, or had closed, and the lights were off. And here I was in the dark, and I heard all this noise going on, and I didn't know what it was. So I smoked in those days, and I had a cigarette lighter, and I took my cigarette lighter out, and I lit it, and the rats were having a conference. I needn't tell you how I felt from then on. I wasn't able to sleep that night. That was on Saturday night now, and Sunday morning I was to get up and get going. I didn't get up, I was already up when I was called for, because I was actually afraid to sleep. And the reason for which I was afraid to sleep, we had an encounter back in school. I don't know if Dr. Dickinson remember that, when this rat bit Howard Ford. This was in Greensboro. A rat bit one of the boys. And of course, I thought about that when I saw those rats and heard them running around. Will I be bitten here by this rat? And you know, you read about these things and what have you. So on Sunday morning, I met the man who was to pick me up, who was the superintendent of the field, and he said to me, "Good morning." I said, "Good morning." And he said, "Are you ready?" I said, "Yes, I am." And I didn't say another word all the way over. He did the talking. I just looked at him. I didn't say anything because I was just boiling within, believe me. And so I went to the service. We drove 33 miles. That was where I had to preach the first place. At, Maplesville is no longer, no, yes. Maplesville was the name of the little town there at Prattsville now. That's where the church is relocated. I had the services. After the services, he said, "Well, you preached a very good sermon there." So I said, so I started to say, "Then what do you expect?" It was one that had been corrected by the professor, so it had to be all right. We drove to the next place, which we had to retrace our steps 33 miles, and then we went 14 miles over the Alabama River, where I preached the second place where Dr. Hunt is preaching now. You're still at King's Landing, aren't you? I preached at King's Landing that afternoon at 2 o'clock. And then I was taken back to this rat hole and dumped there. I didn't know anybody. There was nowhere for me to go. And, of course, in May, it was right pleasant. So I slept on the outside that night. I sat on the steps of the dormitory. I wouldn't dare go in there. And that's how I spent my first 2 days, or the 2 nights and a day. The next day, I was shown to the house, or introduced to the people where I was supposed to remain. And then the fun started. I was told what I had to do, to visit the people and all of this. And the day that I went, I had dinner in the home. There was a young man who was fanning the flies from the food. And there was something there on the table that looked so delicious and luscious. And of course, I went for it because it looked like barbecued pork. And I plucked a piece from the plate, and I said, "Boy, somebody's been barbecuing pork." And he said to me, he said, "No, sir." I said, "That ain't pork." And I proceeded, of course, to cut into it, and it did look darker than the pork I was accustomed to. And then he finally said, when I had a piece in my mouth, he said, "No, sir." He said, "That's possum." And I swallowed it just like, you know, you drop a rock into water, and it said, "Ploom." That's the way it hit my stomach. I was there then for 3 months, and from there I went down to seashore, or on the coast, which is known, which was Mobile, Alabama, and there I stayed for 13 months. And one mistake that I made, I remembered there in the scripture where it said that Christians shouldn't go to court one with the other or against another. And I was out visiting one evening, and one of the members got into it with his wife, and he struck her. And the mother, of course, was one who didn't take anything sitting down. She was always standing, and she found out about it. And she said, "The very idea of his striking my daughter." And she got on the war patch. She said, "I'm going to have him arrested." And one of the elders picked it up, and he came to tell me that this lady was going to have her son-in-law arrested. And he said, "Pastor, that just can't happen." And I said, "Yes, where is she now?" He said, "She's supposed to go to get the sheriff." So I didn't have a car then. I had a horse. And he led the horse, and we walked 7 miles due north. only to find when we got there that she had gone already 7 miles due west for the sheriff. And we just turned right around and continued to walk. And when we got there, we went to the sheriff's house, which was now about 11:30 or 12 o'clock. And the house was dark, and we debated with ourselves, should we call? And then we finally decided to call. And the sheriff answered. She asked, who's there? And she said, this is Paralee, Mr. Sheriff. Yes. So what can I do for you, Paralee? They knew each other. The elder said, I'm looking for Miss Paralee. Has she been here? No, I haven't seen Paralee. Did anybody come for you to arrest so-and-so? No, nobody. Well, there we were. We had walked these 14 miles for nothing. Well, by this time now, we're over in the evening, in the morning, and I was teaching school, and I had 5 miles to walk due east before getting to my house, which by this time now, the sun was coming up, and classes started at 8:30. Needless to say, I didn't go to bed that night. And of course, the kids didn't get very much out of me that day other than the strop. If they just batted their eyes the wrong way, I'd have had it, because I was irritable and what have you. And this word got back to the superintendent. He came there and he lashed me for being so stern and taking that out on the children and so forth and so on. Well, we went along with that. And now we'll move on a little to some of the things that were just a little bit more pleasant. I must say that this brother did a good job with all of the congregations that he had, but more especially the one that I refer to, which was Vineland, or Good Shepherd. Those people were eager to learn. The older people wanted to come to Bible school more than the youngsters, the children. But we had no curriculum or any courses to offer them. So he went to the conference and he asked the conference what could he give them. And there were as many people in Vacation Bible School, adults, as there were children. And when I was there now, in order to serve them all at Christmas time, we had our first service at 4 o'clock in the morning. And we had our children's program in connection with that. I'll never forget that morning. It started raining about midnight, this Christmas Eve night, and it rained. And when it rained in Alabama, you better know what you're doing going over those clay roads. And, when it rains and the dirt or the loose dirt on the road just washes right off and you have nothing but that hard clay, and it's just like glass. It's worse than ice, slipping and sliding. And I slid down into a mud hole. And 4 o'clock came, and I was still there in that mud hole. And some of the men said, he's on his way, he's in a mud hole somewhere. And they had a 1928 Ford, A model, which was known as the mud car. And they hopped in this mud car with shovels and chain, and they came looking for me, and they found me. Today, well, by this time, what had happened, trying to get out of this, I had thrown a valve, and it was going pop, 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 pop. Of course, I didn't know what it was all about. And so we started the car up, and quickly one of them, who knew something about cars, he said, shut it off. Shut it off before that valve comes through the side of your motor. So they hooked the chains onto my front axle, and they pulled me out, pulled the car to the church. And there I left my car and used the mud car to make the other 5 services the rest of that day. And those people were there in huge numbers for the program, children. And that, believe me, made my day to see all of those people in all of that rain and mud at that hour in the morning and so eager and ready to hear the word as well as give out the word. I shall never forget that. Now, that's just one such experience. There are many others that I could relate, but I'm not going to take your time for that. Since in Philadelphia, I've had good days and I've had bad days. I've had good weeks, bad weeks. I've had good Sundays and bad Sundays. For many years, I was the only black pastor in the Eastern District. I was the only black pastor in Philadelphia. But the people as such, the congregations, made no difference. They called on me just as though I was, they were all black or I was white. I preached in every congregation in Philadelphia. But this is the part that I couldn't understand. After the service, they said, say to me, Pastor, you know something? You preached a good old Lutheran sermon. Well, I just wondered what they expected me to preach. A good old Lutheran sermon. I hold the record, I think. I think they have, so to speak, checked it out to show you what the people there in the Philadelphia area thought and do still think. I'm the only black pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to have been the first to pastor an all-white congregation in an all-white neighborhood. I do have a runner-up now, I think, in the person of Dr. King. Dr. King was vacancy pastor for a congregation in Jefferson City, understand? He came after I did. And right today, this congregation would rather hear me preach, they say, than to eat when they were hungry. I feel a little badly to some extent. We are this year exchanging pulpits during the Lenten season. There are five of us. And of the five, well, four so far, the fifth one is coming up next Wednesday. My attendance has been better. Some of the people, some of the older people came out and they said, oh, we just had to come in here, our pastor. And when they were calling pastors, they had, or at least six declensions, and they said at subsequent meetings, we dare you to leave the room. I was circuit counselor. I said, I dare you to leave the room. So I said, why? Well, you just leave, we'll tell you. Leave the room. I said, no, I'm supposed to be in the meeting. And then afterwards they told me, if you had left the room, we were going to extend you the call. But if you were in there, we know you wouldn't let it go through. And you would just call rank on us, and that was it, and what have you. But while they were being facetious there, I think, nevertheless, some of them were in dead earnest. I've enjoyed my ministry. I don't think that the congregation had any choice. I'm in Philadelphia much too long. If the Lord permits me to see October 17th of this year, I will have been there 36 years. And I say to those of you who are aspiring for the holy ministry, whether black or white, or what do you call it, Kermit? Where is it? Pardon? No, you didn't call it racially mixed. Racially mixed congregation. Whatever ministry you are planning, don't stay 36 years. That's much too long. 10 years is long enough, believe me. Because then you can't repeat your sermons, you see. And you can't repeat yourself. There are so many things that they know what you're going to do before you do it. So I knew that's what the pastor was going to do. Just like in a meeting just recently, I didn't agree with something that that they were proposing. And one of the members said, look, you may as well save your breath. The pastor's not going to say don't say it or don't disagree with him. He's not going to say that. But the pastor already knows what he's going to do. And when we, once we finish discussing it, whatever, you say we're going to do it. So you may as well save your breath. Well, you see, they know by virtue of the fact I've been there so long, just the way I'm thinking, the way I'm moving. So don't stay there too long. Now, I grant that I call ranks here. You see, Dr. Hunt is the one really to present the sorrows. And since I had the first, I was the first one up, and the chairman, or the master of ceremonies this evening, I took advantage of it, and I went on and just said what I had to say. And now he has to come through. He can't back out and say, you do it, because I have already done it. And it's with great pleasure that I introduce the the senior pastor, or should we say the dean now, of the black pastors in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Dr. Hunt.
I see I am to speak on the joys and sorrow of a veteran minister. I like to speak on the wheels and woes of a veteran minister to change the subject. However, just a few words, and I don't want to keep you very long. I didn't go to Alabama as Dr. Lavallee did. I belong in Alabama. Born there, reared there, went to school there until I went to the seminary. I was called back to Alabama. On the year that I finished school and my call said, your call is to Ebenezer Admiral. And any other place the superintendent may desire to send. This is true. I went on back home in Selma. When I got to Selma, that was the headquarters of the Nautical Conference. Superintendents always lived there in central Alabama, what we call the Black Belt. And he told me this. Yes, your call said that. We want you to go down in Clark County, in Marengo County, and start a new mission. Sure enough, I did. I went down to Clark County, the place they call Bashy, Alabama. A certain fellow, and your wife is from that place. It's out of that place congregation I serve in. And then there was another one about 24 miles away. I was also to start a mission in this particular community. They were announcing that they were going to ordain a new minister, install him in a mission at Bashai. I arrived there on Wednesday. Went to midweek service on Wednesday night. The pastor who was serving them preached. Sunday night, he's going to install me as a preacher and also ordain me. We had a church, I say a house, about 16 by 24. The night that I was ordained, there were eight adults, and five children. One minister ordained me. The next morning he told me, I'm giving it to you. He left. I was out there 9 miles from the nearest town, which is Thomasville. Being out there, I didn't have any way to get to town. I didn't have any way to even get to the store unless I'd get out and walk. So I stayed out there for 2 or 3 months. And finally they said, it's time you start the mission in Marengo County. I went to Marengo County, met with those people on July the 12th, 1931. It was at noon. I got to the place, the church there, were about 100 people there, which was surprising. They wanted a mission, they said. And they wanted a church. We made arrangements, and I told them I would come to you on Thursday night. That we would come to you on the second and fourth Sunday mornings. And that we would open a day school there, and so the teacher could help them with their Sunday school. And that was done. The first school opened, it's one teacher had 60 students. I had service there for 12 months. I had midweek service where we studied the catechism and the doctrines of the church. We had services on second and fourth Sundays. Now it's coming up Palm Sunday. And I began to ask them who all ought to be confirmed. One man, I thought he was not going to be confirmed because he was one of the head deacons in the Baptist church in that community. He came up and said, you're not going to take my name? So Sunday morning, we had confirmation. The superintendent was there. I confirmed 65 adults over 35 years old, 27 between 30 and 14, and baptized 35 children. That was the congregation on the first day And that day, today, I rejoice. This was part of my ministry. I enjoyed that work down in that section. I was a second writer, and finally the superintendent came to me and said, look, we want you to take on two more congregations. If you do, we'll take you out of the classroom. Remember, I was teaching at Baroque School also. So I did. But he said, now to serve, then you must move up on the north end. I moved up in the parsonage, the place that Pastor Lavallee, Dr. Lavallee, came to live. And I stayed up there about 7 years. Finally came again and said, you're too far on the north end. You ought to go back on the south end. He moved me back down on the south end. Sure enough, I went back to the south end down at Thomasville, where I was about the center. About 9 months, he said, look, Mr. Bridget is leaving a certain place at Pine Hill. And I said, who is going to teach the school? The board wants you to teach it. You move to Pine Hill. I said, I don't know if I'm going to do that or not. Finally, I did. So I decided to go. Went to Pine Hill, and there I remained about 10 months. Taught the school, had the service, served the circuit. But I found out what was the matter. And the trouble was this. Someone had said that a pastor's wife was not supposed to work. My wife was teaching in the county. I was getting $55 a month with a wife. And I couldn't make it. I couldn't cut it that. We had bad roads. There were no pavement between Dallas County and Mobile County if you went down that road. And none of those counties, all roads are dirt roads or gravel roads. Using a car, sleeping on the road at night. I took that a very long time. And finally, when he said, move to Pine Hill, and this is some of my sorrows. I piled half of my furniture on the platform, and I preached from that side. My furniture is on that side. The people, the ladies of the congregation put curtains around them. I stayed there for about 9 months, and finally, I said I would leave. And I did leave. Now I'll tell you the story that happened when I was leaving. I went to Florida. I had a government job already before I left, but I had taken the test. Had been down, had a physical, and knew all what I was going to do. And when I got on, going down the road, got out around Atmore, I had a flat. I got farther down the road, I had another flat. Tired of the ration at that time. Some of you remember that. And my wife said, the Lord has blocked the wheel of the chariot. I thought about the children of Israel and Pharaoh. That first thing came to my mind. Anyway, I went on. And I remained in Florida 5 years until certain things changed. I was asked to come back, and so I came back. Then I was called to the congregation out at King's Landing that he mentioned here just now. Wanted me to teach at school, serve the congregation. Sure enough, I did that. But they said, we're going to make that guy be quiet. I think my mouth got me in trouble. You know, I'll tell you if I have to run. So that's the reason. I stayed out there for 1 year, and then when Dr. Elwinger came, things changed. Then I was called to Selma, to the school. I served and serving there for quite a while. But the joy in the ministry is this, to see how people appreciate what you are doing for them. Now, my trouble was not with the people, but my trouble was with the administration. I'll tell it just like it is. That was my trouble. And the reason I told him, and I said, what does I have to do with Dr. Soufflot's house and his wife, as long as his wife is doing a decent job and so forth? Nothing. She'd work in another place, helping people. That's not my business. That's his business. And so I could see that. But I was a guy who had to go, but I didn't back down. They offered me, they wanted me to back down if they had to. They had the other boys in the shell, you know. If they could have got me to back down, then it had all the other boys, and they said, look, he did it, and he backed down. We'll give you this and that, and I wouldn't do it. Told them, no, I left. And so I've been back now for a good number of years. In fact, I've been at Alabama Lutheran Academy and College for nearly 30 years now. I was out 3 or 4 years, about 27 years I worked out. Dean has stood there for a number for 25 years. And one thing I have found out, if we are to work with people, if we are to gain people, I'm talking about black people now, we're going to have to be up and about our Father's business. And as a church, we're going to have to do one thing, try to make an impact on the black. We are really halted between two opinions now. What I mean is this. We're not making the progress now with all the privileges and all the conditions we have than they made under the synodical count with all the handicaps they had. I'm honest with this. We're not doing it. We're not getting the people. You understand what I mean by that? We're not getting the people. And there's a reason. And this is the thing that makes you fearful. I told a young man the other day, I wonder what's going to happen to the church. And I still wonder what's going to happen to the church if we don't try to gain young people and send them out. These are my fears. With all my joys, I have my fears. And one more thing I want to say. I went into the ministry. I didn't tell you how I got in the ministry. And I'm going to tell you that last, and that was, I went to a Presbyterian school up through the 10th grades. I finished high school at Alabama Lutheran Academy and College. And they almost had persuaded me to become a Presbyterian preacher. But the point was, I was not Lutheran. My mother was. The missionary had come, and he had confirmed her in my community. And then he wrote me a letter. I was working in Mobile and said, the missionary will be there. He waited to where they're going to have church. And say, you go. I went on out there as an obedient son. I knew she was going to ask me, was I there, the pastor? So I went. I promised him I was coming the next Sunday. Help with the Sunday school. I went out the next Sunday. I went the next Sunday. Been going all these years. And I haven't been going yet. But this is the thing that encouraged me, found the truth, and appreciate the truth. Then he got at me about going into the ministry. And I didn't intend to go into the ministry. I told my mother I was going to be a dentist. But, you know, she kept talking. I want one of my boys to be a minister. Every time I do a Sunday home, my older brother said, Mama, your preacher doing such and such a thing. You know, they kept that going. So finally, I did go to the seminary. She carried me to the, went to Greensboro, carried me to the railroad station. Now, when you go into the ministry, you stay. That's the last talk I had with her. Even as I think of it. Standing there on the platform, you go, you stay. And that's the thing that hounded me those 5 years that I was out. You go into the ministry, you stay. I didn't forget that. That's the last talk I had with her. So I'm here today. I'm glad, and I thank God for putting me into the ministry. But sometimes it makes me feel for the ministry among our people, particularly in our section. And I could say more about that, but I will not take your time. But they have blown so many chances, and so many things have happened in the last year since district took over in Senate, things that have almost killed the mission among the black people in certain parts of Alabama. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Hunt. Now, we'll do the same thing for you that we did this afternoon. There may be some questions you would want to ask or some comments that you would want to or make. We're here to share with you the joys and sorrows of the ministry. As I said, as far as I'm concerned, mine were all joys, not too many sorrows. But I'm sure you can glean from what Dr. Hunt said that he had many sorrows. And there are others who had more sorrows than he or I. Those who were before us. I think of the past who confirmed my mother, the now sainted Dr. Charles P., or Reverend Charles P. He confirmed my mother. My mother's 84 years old now, or will be after the 4th of July. And so many others, like Calvin Thompson, who died in the last 2 years. I had two pastors in my lifetime, and both of them are dead now, but both of them lived to see me through and to hear me preach and to threaten me, and both of them spanked me. My dad said to one of the pastors, "This is your boy," from 8:30 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon. "And all I ask of you, pastor, is to save his hands and his eyes. His eyes to see what I want his hands to do, and the rest belongs to you." And I said to him many days, since, of course, now he was retired and I was a full-grown man, I didn't think that he would lash out on me. "You know, I think you understood my dad to mean literally that the rest of me belonged to you, because you really let me have it." And as the Lord would have it, I lived long enough, and so did he, to retire and to become a pastor emeritus in my congregation. And I was the one that, so to speak, delivered the eulogy at his funeral, and also committed his body to the ground, as well as my first pastor. Both of them I buried. The first one, I wasn't supposed to do that, but I don't know why. It was raining terribly much this day, and they had one of these canopies, and they beckoned for me to come under the canopy while the rest of the people stood there with umbrellas and what have you, and I was right next to the pastor who was to perform the burial rites and what have you, and without any warning or word, he said, "Here you are." There before all the people, and I didn't want people to know how we got along, so I just went on and committed. But believe me, that was one of the hardest thing I ever was assigned to do or asked to do, to commit his body to the ground. And it was most comforting to have those two, and that was a joy of my ministry. When my wife went home, soon will be 11 years, that both of them came, and they were there the night that she was eulogized, and that Sunday, both of them conducted the service. One had the liturgy, and the other one had the sermon, and both of them participated in the communion service, and my three children and I knelt there, and they communed us. I'm sorry. But that was a day of rejoicing for me, that they were still ministering to me, even though now I was well advanced in years, that they were there. Are there any questions or any comments that you would like to make or ask? You better ask us now. After we go outside, we don't know anything more. Or it'll cost you something for us to tell you that. yes, Pastor Bishop.
Mission outreach. Our mission outreach. That's one of the problems. Is our mission outreach is not as good. What has happened is this: you know, going community to tell people now, look, we consolidate these churches. Next Sunday, our Sunday next, we have a service over yonder. We never had more service here. Instead of having meeting with those people, letting them decide what they're going to do. with the elders and so forth, and they would have, and they would have put the church at such a place where all of them could attend. And then said, we're going to buy a bus and put a bus on the road one or two years. You got no bus. You got nothing. Some of the people can't even get to church. This is a mistake. Now, I'm not against consolidating where the congregations were small. But you should think of what the people have to say. And this was not done. And it's not, it's a little better now, but it wasn't being done. We're going to do this. Men came in who knew everything. I said this, and I don't say it, my fingers crossed. Never worked in with the black church, knew anything about the black. They knew everything. Making German Lutherans out of black folks. And that's what they weren't going to do. You understand what I'm saying?
I think I saw a hand over here, was it? All right, any other? John? There's a young man whom I've known for many, many years.
Don't tell him.
But there was somebody who knew him before I, and that was my wife. He was my wife's right hand long before I knew her as well as him. It was through her that I met him many years ago. All right, John.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here tonight. I was supposed to be at Bible class at St. James, but I stayed here in order to reap the benefit of what you're doing here. And everything Dr. Hunt said is so true. I walk 11 miles ever so often to hear him preach on a dusty road. Catherine to down there where he's talking about in the woods. Now keep in mind the way he's talking about is not in the city, it's down in the woods in Wilcox County. Down at Vineland, back in the woods in Marengo County. I'm living there now. But I got to say this. We in the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, in the United States of America, in the state of Alabama and Missouri, where we might be found, must understand two things, two basic things. And I'm speaking from experience. It isn't written in a book. It's written on my back. It's written in my mouth. I'm wearing teeth, false teeth, as a result of the punishment of the system under which we are living. A system, when you step out of line, they castrate you, they lynch you, they knock your teeth out, they kill your wife, and they kill your children. This is the United States system under which we are living. And the church is part of this system. You know it, and I know it. And we are tuned and programmed to perform in this system, whether we like it or not, whether God like it or not. They care nothing about God, nothing about you or me. And this gospel that we are going to preach and proclaim. I've been an unruly child in the system for 37 years and have suffered every injustice that can come our way, even at the hand of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Because the first time I went to jail for serving God was in Mississippi in a Lutheran church where my family and I attend that Sunday morning. The deacon said, no, you can't come in here. The next thing we know, the sheriff was there. The church in Mississippi is part of the system. The pastor said, I'm sorry. I can't help you. I wished I could. But my pregnant wife and I had to leave. That's part of the story. Quite a few of the students here who are going out next year, this summer, doing vicarage, have come to me. I want you to tell me how we can best carry on ministry among blacks. And I don't be candy about it at all. I tell them the truth. First, make up your mind whether you want to go into the ministry and whether you want to serve a black community. You first got to make up your mind that. And then whether or not you're going to pay the price. Well, Paul got his head cut off. Many of the prophets, their system cut Jesus down and hung him on the cross. Many bodies floating in the Alabama River and the Mississippi River in this same system in which we are passing and preaching and teaching and converting to Christ. Don't think because the President of the United States belonged to the First Baptist in Georgia, Plains, Georgia, that he controlled the system. The system controlling him, President Carter. Don't think because Bob Berglund is the Secretary of Agriculture in Washington, D.C., and member of Christ Lutheran Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota, that he is controlling anything in his office. The system is controlling him. So whether we're in high places or whether we're in low places, we've got to keep this in mind. You young men that's going out to serve the blacks, you're facing a world. Just a few days ago, you saw what happened in North Alabama. I saw a cross about tall as this thing burning in the edge of the city, Decatur, pretty tall. And I've had them burn in my backyard. I had them burn in my front yard in Alabama. I taught school in Alabama in St. Clair County with a shotgun, with buckshot, loaded, sitting on a tree, teaching Sunday school, teaching Bible school. And Klansmen going down the road with rifles sticking out the car with the support and the backing of the system. Somewhere down the line, we got to speak out. The Christians in America and around the world got to speak out against a corrupt system. Until that is done, white or black, irrespective of who you are, where you're from, your struggle is going to be the same as mine have been. One eye almost knocked out. Can't hear well out of one ear. A mouth full of false teeth. 2 $30,000 houses down in Alabama was burned down. Thought they had my children and I in the house hemmed up, but they burned it down. Killed $122,000 worth of cattle. Because they didn't want one Lutheran church build in a community in St. Clair County and in the city of Gadsden, and this is the way that we are to stop. They ran the white missionaries out. They had to go. And they tried to run me out, and I said I wasn't going to go. I set a shotgun out there and prayed God to keep shotgun so I could get it, and prayed and taught the Sunday school lesson and confirmed, Elwanger confirmed 86 members in Gadsden. I'm going to hush in Gaston. I'm going to wind it up in Gaston and Asheville. Only to go to church one Sunday morning, the preacher was standing there to tell me they had closed this church. After 7 years of almost bloodshed and life-threatening, they didn't say we're going to. They didn't tell me nothing. They just said, the next Sunday you're going over yonder for church. And the teacher came to teach Sunday, teach everyday school, went to the Christian day school. He didn't say nothing to me. The teacher was sitting there waiting. And they said, no, your school was not going to be this year. I had registered the children and taught school 2 weeks until he could get there. No, you're not going to have school this year. Now, if I said anything, good or bad, organized or unorganized, that mean anything to you and your mission, at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri, these few minutes, everything I said is a real fact out there in life. Whether you're 10 years old, whether you're 80 years old, like Dr. Hunt, the story is the same. And we're living in a system. And the church is part of the system. And the church is conforming to the system. And whether God speak or whether you speak, the system is corrupt and evil, and our job is to straighten the system out and preach God's word in the system and take the consequences. And like Paul with his head cut off, we may end up somewhere in the creek or river with our heads chopped off, either in a physical manner or in a spiritual manner. The poor man died a whole lot of times. You died a whole lot of times, even before you have taste of death. And we're going to have to do it. And I want to say this to the young ministers, black and white, who are here, who are going out. Make it up your mind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the first time, I found out how old Dr. Hunt is. I suppose we have gone about as far as we want to go in this, unless there are some questions that you would like to ask. Yes.
Now, I have a question to Dr. Hunt.
System as we had it. And what I mean by that is this, that you take in our little town of Selma, I'll use that as an example. Dr. Wright knows what I'm talking about. Heller, congregation there, St. John. St. John had about 30 members in it, 32. The church as a whole carried on that way. And over there, not far, there's our church in 300 members. They closed that church, and the district hadn't said a word. I'm showing you, this is the thing, we're not communicating, that's one thing. Next thing, I think we as missionaries to see people as people, and that hadn't been done. People as people. And when I say that, I believe the church should stop starting in a certain place where there are plenty of churches of our denomination, this kind of mission, that kind of mission. I believe the church should have a mission and invite everybody who wants to come, who can understand the language. You understand what I'm talking about. And quit talking about their culture and my culture. If they can understand the language, invite everybody. I think that's the best way to do it. If we do that, we get a problem.